Hello, hello. This is Kinnack, also known as Landon Winkler, coming back to you for the 40th Metroplexity podcast. I don't think that quite means we're over the hill yet, but let's take a look at some questions this fine, sunny March day. I almost said February. Not because it's the February podcast questions thread, but because it is so damn cold. Alright, first of all, we've got a giant block of questions from Al. Can we get the normal update on how is life and what you've been working on? Life has been a little bit awkward, just in that the winter and I do not get along. In that I have some sort of anxiety, depression type issues. And definitely gets way worse in the winter, which I had not actively realized, but my spouse, Liz, I was like, hey, I was in a terrible mood in January for like a week, and she was like, oh yeah, you're like this every January, and I was like, I am. So yeah, nice to have another person double-checking that. But that's starting to sort of get out of those doldrums, which is quite nice. As far as what I've been working on, I have mostly been getting some work done for the Old Town stuff, which is pretty cool. I'm actually really excited with how that's turning out so far. Still got quite a bit of work to go. Don't think that that's going to drop like next week or anything like that. There's a Old Town is, I mean, obviously another step in the main quest line. There's a lot of moving parts that go into something like that. So that's sort of a long-term thing. But we definitely have some progress on that front, and I've been trying to, you know, just make little updates as they come up. But with the amount that I've been putting into Old Town, those obviously have been a bit sporadic. But it's sort of a choice between getting Old Town done and getting the small updates done sometimes, and I would rather actually keep moving on Old Town rather than lose that train. Losing out on the momentum with a project of that size can be kind of catastrophic. Eh, I guess catastrophic isn't really the right word. It can just make the project take literally forever. So that's a bunch of questions about a number of things. Oh, about the number of things, if you're willing to share. Sure. With Imperial, have you found all contacts now? 29 known so far. I believe you have found all of them. There's a couple I've been meaning to add for a while, but those haven't gotten in yet. I think that's the whole set. Any hidden avatars added in the last little bit? There are, I feel like I did add one pretty recently. Let me double check here. Yeah, there's actually only one that's been added super recently, but I think people will be pretty pleased with it when they find it. So that was, there's only been one added since the I guess since the last avatar, which I'm pretty sure you found. Would you be willing to give a count on the news stories to be found? We found 47 plus 13 unearthly ones equals 60, which seems like a ton already. Presumably several more unearthly ones to be found as the seasons roll through. Yeah, I can... pretty sure they're numbered. Yeah. Looks like there are 96 news stories total. And yes, there is one for every unearthly item. Does every unearthly item have a news story? Oh, sorry. Yes, every unearthly item has a news story. Are there any super obscure hidden news stories? Despite their claim, the news team seems pretty invasive. There are a lot of pretty situational ones. Just sort of getting you, you know, sort of nudged in the right direction, or, you know, laying out that there are directions to be nudged in. Yeah, there's obviously quite a few of those. So let's see. Yeah, I guess. Looks like there are a couple of non-unearthly ones you haven't found yet, but was there any way to associate the Unknown Lenses with Leandra Silver before the News Stories edition? Was she involved in anything else we might not be aware of? I thought there was... I don't think she was called out by name, but there was sort of an implication buried with the Unknown Lenses. She's... not really, like, you know, a central figure, but just in general, her family is fairly important. And you'll get to meet her son. Well, I shouldn't say meet. You'll get to enter her son's area of influence, would be the better way to put that, in downtown, because he owns a huge chunk of it. But, yeah, she was one of the wealthiest people in the city, so it's not surprising that she has a finger in a lot of pies. And she's also, I mean, pretty eccentric, which means that you can run into some pretty weird stuff. This sort of thing that Zach's usually got his eye out for. We found 17 abstract sketch messages. Are we close to finding them all? Let me... That one I'm going to have to... look up. No, it looks like that's actually all of them. The Skittish Son seems to be protected from the evil eye, maybe possibly because of the eye amulet he is wearing. Should the amulet protect us the same way? I feel like it's supposed to... It does look like it should be, but it is possible that certain enemies aren't using Evil Eye correctly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so what's going on there is that a lot of them are directly using the successful version of Evil Eye. So let me make a note for myself that... Saber did not seem any more intimidated than normal after I ate Charmed a lot. Is there any way to really freak him out? There are a lot of ways to freak Saber out. He doesn't necessarily know exactly what happened in the shard fight, so whether cannibalize him or whatever may not won't necessarily affect Saber, but there are actually some pretty entertaining, in my opinion, intimidation methods that you can use on him, and some pretty good responses to those. I think Discordant Chimes is the only known etheric technique that doesn't require either some etheric effect or an item equipped. It will use turns of etheric if you have them, but it still works without. Is that working as intended? That looks not right from the wiki. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not how that was supposed to work. I do not actively remember, but the way that it was set up, it was actually dealing no damage if you had the xylophone, so that's obviously not right. So, thank you for letting me know about that. I continue to really want some sort of anti-coin of the season, which caps your stats at something low. Any chance in an item which limits your base stats would be a blessing for for spaders for all time. Yeah, I can probably do something like that. Thanks, Al. You're welcome. Some questions from Voles. Kinnak, we meet again, but this time the questions I ask will be different from last time. The chorus gasps. What if the Snowman leaderboards displayed totals for all players' effort combined as well as individual results? For example, so far there have been 1,500 snowmen built this year. You can also use this space to talk about whether totals unlock content if a meteorite to head has damaged the secret-keeping part of your brain. Yeah, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if they included the total... Or at least the, total where, I feel like that's appropriate, which would be the number of snowmen built and the, amount that you've helped the students. I would tend... probably not to include the total. Well, the total scariness is probably worth listing there too. The exploding candy stomach experience TM has a bizarre influence on your effects, at least according to the wiki. E.g., your memory of watching a clown statue is removed. Is this intentional, and is there a logical pattern to it? There. Most things which remove effects remove them sort of by categories. Caster capsule removes, you know, any effect that could be removed by vomiting. Exploding stomach code presumably removes a category that includes some weird stuff. I might have misspoke there. Oh! Okay, yeah, there's something actually way funnier going on there. Yeah, no, that's, yeah, once the pattern there is figured out as far as what it does, which exactly effects that it grabs, I think it'll make a lot of sense, and will make you hopefully laugh as maniacally as I just did. How about a checkbox next to each equipment slot to lock the current item in play so it doesn't get switched when you change outfits? I'd love to be able to go lock feathered cloak, equip plus etheric power outfit, lock weapon and gadget, equip plus choice outfit. I don't think so. Yeah, I am not inclined to do that. It seems like it would end up being kind of cluttered, interface-wise. It's possible to equip the Midgard security outfit and punk outfit at the same time. This makes the punk uprising quest weird. First, you beat up punks that think you're security, then a punk approaches you for help fighting security. Yeah, there's probably some, yeah, for most of those, I just, manually check to make sure, you know, which one is, appropriate. Although, I mean, in that case, like, the fact that they're confused isn't the worst thing, but, it would probably make a little more sense if it, forced you to one or the other. Would there be a downside to allowing players to reach higher than the max energy hunger body camp as long as they were set to the cap at rollover? Admittedly, the only benefit is making me feel less stupid while gorging on sushi, and then I at least have the sushi to console me. I think that the downside there is that it doesn't actually make any fucking sense. And I say that having also played Kingdom of the Loathing where it works like that, and just not... It's really, honestly counterintuitive. Like, I do not... Like, it obviously, it works. Like, it's not the end of the world. But that's not how caps on things work, normally. It's not gonna say it's poor design or anything, but I don't think that it follows, that should happen. I do think that there is a downside, and I think that the downside is that, it's inconsistent with what people should expect. Obviously, like, you can't heal yourself over your max hit points, which no one would ever argue with, right? And you can't, like, you know, draw down your energy, your body, your hunger below your minimum, because you're gonna, you know, get it bumped up the next day. So having, like, this one weird side exception does not sit very well with me. And I don't think that it's something that necessarily makes a lot of sense, just design-wise. Kinnack, one of these things happened, sort of, and I'm thinking of another. I haven't managed to confirm this, so maybe we could play another round of Mastermind? Here's the list. Harvesting a replacement hand from the Tree of Hands. Crystal Hand interacting with the Tree of Hands Porcelain Tree. Dive for cover plus Silver Shield plus Mercy Killer blocking etheric attacks. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure I added one of those after you suggested it. Maybe that was already in there. Ah, yes. Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely, one of those is in for sure. It just doesn't necessarily, have, the exact effect that you thought it did. And I am still, thinking of another. It's on my to-do list. It just hasn't, come true yet. Cryptodynamic. Hey, Kinnack. Hey, Cryptodynamic. It looks like, again, last Christmas, we didn't manage to make much progress towards bringing out the snow snakes. Any chance of a hint to keep in mind for this year? I actually tried to change the description to give that a little more cluey, but apparently I didn't manage to do that. So, I think I will try to, again, add some cluefulness, and we'll see if that helps. So, the incredibly abused pants. Pretty sure I know the general inspiration for that one, but which version of the story is the first one that springs to your mind? The original, the Wendigo, or the version in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark? Well, I guess the first one that actually comes to mind is the version of the Wendigo in Pathfinder, which is heavily inspired by, I mean, all of the above, sort of. That's it's a bit of a kitchen sink sort of thing. The second thing that comes to mind about the Wendigo is totally the old X-Men arcade game, where, you know, you get to I think it's the first boss, or very close to it. Wendigo! And then you start pumping quarters into the machine, because that game fucking ruled. But as far as the actual stuff I was pulling from, the original legends are definitely things that I sort of drew from. They're is a chunk that shows up far most prominently in the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark version, though. That did get in there. So, sort of a lot of cross-pollination as far as that goes. The new maps for the slides are really nice and make me look forward to seeing the art for Old Town. Are there any other area art updates somewhere in the pipeline? Yeah, I would actually like to redo Southside and eventually the docks as well. I think the docks are mostly fine, but it's just sort of a slow process because Puyo does not like doing maps or backgrounds. So it's sort of like, here's, you know, this huge list of, you know, items and whatever, and one map. And I can, you know, slip one of those in, you know, every couple of months. So, it's just sort of a slowish process. But I'm really glad that you like them. And I will be sure to pass that along to her. What would you say your favorite unearthly item from the last year is? I really like the crown. I think there's a lot of really cool stuff going on there. Other than that, let me think. The Tattered Horror paperback is pretty baller. Yeah. Now that sounds all right. Yeah, and the Incredibly Abused fans. So a lot of it has to do with the I guess sort of the inspirations behind them as much as anything else. Some questions from Arcane. Do you see this dress as white and gold or blue and black? Yes. The dress. Dun dun dun. Oh, weird. I actually got the white and gold for a second there. But yeah, it is totally a blue and black dress. My spouse saw it and is really good with optical illusions in general, but like got the white and gold first, and then managed to flip the blue, and it became like the ugliest dress. Like it was this horrible blue and gold dress, but she could not get the black. But yeah, I definitely just got the blue and black. Are you familiar with Crusader Kings 2? The costume crown item reminds me of all the intrigue that game gets you into. Assassination, pretenders, factions to install a new ruler, murdering your firstborn child to your secondborn child, who is heir to the second wife's empire, Francia, inherits both her empire and your empire and brings forth the new age of dominance onto Europe. Maybe look into it if you want to bring this item into three coin territory. Actually, I was very tempted with that item to expand into three coins, because there was a virtually endless amount of stuff that I could do. But yeah, I do have at least a passing familiarity with Crusader Kings 2. I watch Northern Lion and Mathis Games Let's Plays on YouTube. And they do some Crusader Kings 2. Actually, one of my... I was just talking to Liz yesterday about Crusader Kings 2, actually. And about how there's a really interesting sort of intellectual, we'll call it a conceit, but just like a sort of, to be less polite, sort of bullshit that people pull with a lot of media, which I feel like is most easily seen in horror movies. Wherein they're like, oh, I would never do that. Like, this character is an idiot. But also shows up in, when we're talking about just other cultures a lot of the time. And it's like, oh, you know, these people are so, so terrible, you know, I would, you know, they should, you know, stop doing all of these awful things. And when you're watching a movie or reading a book or something, it's very comfortable to do that sort of thing. But there's actually a very different thought process that goes into it with games, in that, you know, the Crusader Kings 2 example is that, like, looking back on the era that Crusader Kings 2 is emulating, it's very easy to say, like, oh, you know, this, you know, they were so terrible to women, and they were, they had all these, you know, bullshit holy wars, and all of this stuff. But, and, you know, when you're reading about it or watching a movie about it, it's very easy to keep that sort of bullshit, like, unthinking moral superiority about it. But when you're playing a game with it, and in Crusader Kings 2, you know, you have this sort of... You have the same sort of pressures and societal constraints that they did to a large extent. And so, when your character has a female child in Crusader Kings 2, you're kind of pissed off. Like, it's kind of a pain in the ass. And, like, you're looking to, you know, arrange marriages for people, because that's fucking awesome. Like, there are these very strong rewards for these behaviors and punishments for, you know, the quote wrong behaviors, that you end up, you know, when you have the same rewards and penalties in the game that people, well, when the same things are rewarded and penalized in the game that were rewarded and penalized in real life, you end up making very similar decisions. And because, I mean, that's, I'm not going to say, like, you know, economic game theory explains everything or whatnot, but it's sort of by actually making the consumer of the media make those decisions, it cuts through this sort of armor that we build up around ourselves. Going back to the horror example, I was I GM a lot of Pathfinder, and actually, if you want to read a lot of my player reports, go to kinecgames.tumblr.com. That's where I post all of them, and other stuff sort of sporadically, mostly about Pathfinder. So if you're not super interested in Pathfinder, I would probably not bother. But if you are interested in Pathfinder, or just want to listen to me talk about you know, tabletop gaming a lot, that's a place to be. I do like some book reviews and stuff too. Anyway, but I was running Reign of Winter, which is sort of the Pathfinder's Baba Yaga campaign arc, which they call an adventure path. And the in the first adventure, there's a very classic sort of zombie movie scene where there's a some people there who obviously are, like, wounded past the point that they should be alive, and they're trapped, and you can let them out, but obviously, you know, zombies. And the players, not, you know, realizing that they're in a, you know, a zombie movie, which, admittedly, they're not really in a zombie movie, they're just in a world that happens to contain zombies. They let the people out, you know, got sort of, you know, throttled by these zombies. Whereas, if that scene had happened in a movie in particular, but also a lot of times in books, people would call bullshit on it. They'd be like, oh, you know, I would never do that. They're so stupid. But it's like, you know, reality is kind of a different beast, even at the level of when we're talking about a game's reality. Like, when real people are making decisions, they don't actually function at this level that we expect from purely fictional characters. But anyway. You can use the Coronation Crown. It doesn't really do anything if you are etheric. It does something while sober, but can it ever do anything besides the one thing we have it doing while etheric? The main reason it's usable there is so that you can switch it back to a tradable form. There are a lot of unearthly items that have some sort of mechanic like that, just so that they can be traded. I'm going to pause this, and hopefully that will work out. I'll be back in a moment. Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that. Hopefully the sound quality is still good. Speaking of Pretenders, the Pretenders that Chamberlain talks about are an elusive bunch. We've tried trading Visions of Rule blows in PvP, running the Gauntlet, controlling all PvP zones in Full Regalia, having uncontested control for multiple days, purposefully having opposing crownies, controlling different PvC zones, and prancing around with Royal Truth to no avail. Even played a game of chess with the bum, and yelled, "King me!" when I moved a pawn all the way to the other side of the board. That apparently didn't even count as making a move, which the Chamberlain says is what we need to do to make them show up. Honestly, I don't buy it. If that doesn't count as making a move, nothing will. What do you have to say about this? I will... I will double check to make sure that the Pretender code is working, I guess. But... it should be listing... Yeah, no, it doesn't look like it. Okay. So I will, yeah, barring something very strange having happened, I must have left out, some code there. Something isn't working correctly. But when that is working, it should be pretty obvious what's going on, hopefully. I'll have to, I should go debug that. I should actually probably not entirely fix that while it's on the air, but I will try and go through and, awfully suspicious that the Chamberlain is talking to everyone with crowns and is playing us against each other. Maybe he's the real king and means to hide behind us as figurehead rulers. Maybe this whole thing has been a charade. Perhaps the end of the crown topic is an epic boss battle with the Chamberlain himself. Perhaps. I'm always imagining some sort of epic boss battle at the end of every unearthly item content chain. How true is this, and how much truer should it be? I mean, there are a couple of sweet bosses to be had here and there. But for the most part, they don't. I would say probably... less than a quarter? And it's including some ones that have, like, you know, multiples. Like the Cloak of Feathers. epic boss battle with the extreme tackle box? I guess if you count the hardest fishing area in the game as a, epic boss battle, then yes. What would it... epic boss battle from the abstract domino mask be like? I will assume, since they just re-released it on the DS, some people have played Majora's Mask and might know what I'm talking about. At the end of Majora's Mask, I mean, there's obviously, like, mask in the title, whatever, but, not talking about the actual, end fight with... the Skull Kid, per se. Skull Kid / the mask, really. But there is a option to unlock... I forget the exact name. It's something... but Fierce Deity Link is what they call it. And basically get, like, you basically go into the final boss battle with, like, all the Game Genie cheats on, which isn't quite true, but you sort of get this gigantic buff. But the process of getting that would actually, I feel like, be a fairly appropriate epic boss battle for the Abstract Domino Mask. The Chamberlain had an unfortunate encounter with Patchwork Dreams. No, he just has a very unfriendly cat. Argon said he pulled out the sword in the Spring Reflection, white spring light burned away the last dregs of winter pouring from the cracks. Is this a real thing that happened? Well, you'll have to ask Argon about that. Speaking more about the reflections, the maiden from the Summer Reflection points to the west when you have the Mislit Mask. Seems pretty important to her, though it never did lead anywhere, so some sort of content hiding here. There's actually, a fair amount of stuff left to be found still in the in the mirror, which is good. I don't feel even remotely bad having that V3 unearthly coin item. It's like, there's, I guess people are still sort of, you know, playing and figuring out the mini games to some extent. I mean, some of them are pretty solved. There's definitely still some pretty notable, hidden stuff. I don't recall that specifically, pointing to one of them. But there's still quite a bit of stuff there. Speaking more about the reflections, oh, oops, I just read that. What's up with the girls in the fractured reflections? Is there more to their story that we can figure out? I mean, I think that figuring out their stories would be a very useful thing to do, as far as some of the other stuff that's going on there. Whether or not Arlo gets us on the up and up about there being super secrets to the reflections you don't actually expect anyone to ever find, I need to ask, is there a super secret in the autumn reflection? Let's see. I mean, there's some pretty cool stuff in the autumn reflection. Most of the stuff that I don't really, like, super expect people to find is in interactions between the reflections. Twisted Hounds are ubiquitous. Is there a significant piece of content hiding somewhere related to them? I mean, there are bits and pieces about what they're up to and why they're ubiquitous. I don't know if there's enough information for you to understand why they dislike you so much. But that's all mostly story stuff. I don't think there's anything particularly waiting for you on them, although there is quite a bit of content layered there, so it wouldn't actually surprise me, and it also wouldn't surprise me if there were things that some people have found that may not necessarily be common knowledge or be on the wiki, because there's a lot of stuff, and some of it's pretty subtle. For a two-kind item, lens focused on the unknown doesn't seem to do a whole lot. Is there something very big and very small still left to be found with it? I mean, there is some pretty cool stuff. I'm not sure offhand exactly what's been found with it. Let me check before I, you know, accidentally let slip the spoilers of war or anything like that. Yeah, it looks like there is still something pretty noteworthy pending. Hacking questions time. It's laughable when you use a view function on the crosslinks routine. It says that you need to be careful to not overshoot and crash the crosslinks itself. It's almost impossible to crash a crosslinks routine. A batch containing forge blade, crash script, and wideband assault will, for the vast majority of the time, fail to crash it. Is there a reason to want to crash this routine, or did you make it impossibly difficult to crash to strongly hint we aren't supposed to do it? Honestly, I suspect the hardware breaker is easier to crash than this thing. It's possible I Yes. There is. You may not fully know your own power, I guess is the way to put that. There is a check going on there, which, the game assumes that you're trying not to crash it, so if you have the appropriate, ability, let's say, it is actually more difficult to crash. So if you're, you know, a fuck up, it's actually sort of dangerously easy to crash, and if you are not a fuck up, it's actually quite difficult to crash and get the right thing. You don't really get very much out of crashing it though. No, I mean, you get literally just what you see. Like, it's not but yeah, the game is assuming that you're trying not to crash it, and so if you're good at not crashing things, it therefore becomes very difficult to crash. Yeah, okay, sorry, I just needed to look at it and refresh my memory on how that is set up. Speaking of impossible things, like circuit protein analysis in Novos, as hell, the university site has cross-links posting in FRIS and post-archive. It'll want you to crash all those, plus any defenders, before it lets you start the protein analysis routine, and as mentioned before, just trying to crash the cross-links itself will probably get you kicked, and if the site has shared files or an ancient vault, it wants you to crash those too, and then it just becomes literally impossible. It's so difficult, I need to ask if this is working as intended. I don't actually think that it wants you to... Well, I mean, it doesn't require you to crash those things. It's just easier the less you have going on, as I recall. There we go. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, there's, yeah, it's very possible that you just, may not have exactly the right, technique, not in the capital T, game term sense, but yeah, there's, I can very easily see how you got to the conclusion that you're coming to, but there's definitely, if you are bringing these sort of guns to the game that you're talking about in your previous question, you should be able to rock protein analysis, no problem. Like, 0% problem. But, I mean, you have to, as always, put the pieces together correctly. And that can be a little challenging, obviously, at times. Dr. Meyer says that the way data spreads out over the net, he's going to assume there's more cheaters. What does he know about the way data spreads over the net? Why is he holding out on us? Because we can't figure out how to affect what stuff sites have in their files. That is, I mean, that you might be asking a rhetorical question, but he is making a more or less theoretical observation there. I mean, data will sort of spread to fill whatever vacuum it is in. Although, that said, there are definitely ways to get way more cheating sites, if you know what you're doing. Is there anything we should do outside of hacking that'll affect what websites have in their shared files and or post archives? Yes. Yes, there are. You got me pretty good at the end of Christmas EBB. End of Christmas EBB. I'm not actually sure what EBB stands for. Snow Monstrosity. Even I got through all of the RNG enough to test 7 different things before completely running out of energy. Maybe if I hadn't spent so much after Christmas time crafting all of the techs I needed, I could have managed it. I know I poked fun a little at you about this before, but I guess now I gotta have my fingers crossed he snows up again this year. Oh, I apologize for my slurring slash typo, but I gotta have fingers crossed he snows up again this year, despite the fact that was totally just a slip on my part, is a pretty baller pun, so I'm gonna go back and reiterate that. Hey, Kinex, sorry to hear that we're pushing you into forced labor. You'll only go crazy if it's not something you love, after all. I wouldn't say that it being what you love won't drive you crazy. Like, that's kind of usually the first steps towards monomania. Just throwing that out there. Yeah, I'm not a... there are definitely days that I will complain about work because it is, you know, actually, like, a job to one degree or another. But... it's, there's also some very, there are obviously also some very good times there. not that we're not already crazy, but you know what I mean. Lead! We found lead! I could have sworn we'd already tried taking those item parts, but hey, new stuff! Any similar low-level crafting items we've obviously missed? One that I'm still hoping for is a asbestos thread slash material from the Holocaust cloak. That was actually added as part of the update for Lowe's side quest, for Lowe's survivor quest, rather. So that there was, someone pointed out quite aptly, I believe it was +4, that getting metallic powder is a giant pain in the ass, because, as sort of a side effect, well, ended up being, you know, as sort of a side effect of the change from, everyone wearing heavy containment suits to, you know, having 2 grades of containment suits, it became much harder to, collect metallic powder, which is not the intent at all. Lead becoming a thing, is definitely, the side effect of that. You've pretty much taunted us completely by this, and I'm pretty sure you said no. But I'm curious why we still can't fish in Lake Fire, not with a fishing pole, with a hunting spear, just hooking things and pulling them out. There may come a day when you figure out how to fish in the Lake Fire. Looks like we'll... made a lot of headway in filling in the items of ID list, but we're still missing items... 1205 through 1209, charnel reopened content looks like, and 1236 through 1241, looks like after the fig cave and before the diving content. Are these content pieces limited by skills, or is it all things like 1242 Unreal Drip, where we don't seem to have the ability to make it yet? I think those may all be tied into the same thing. Let me check the 1236 range here. Yeah, that's same stuff. 1205. Okay. Yeah, those are sort of those are tied together a little bit in the same sort of same sort of chunk of Survivor's content. But they are technically available. Since we've asked this before and count ourselves, I'll be a little greedy. Are we able to get skills 58 and 79? I mean, most of the skills are available, but for what it's worth, I don't... there are times when there will end up being holes in the table. Like, there'll be items or... skills or whatever that just, like, straight up don't exist. But both of those do look available. Anyway, off to the phone minds with me. Full-time work should not be the goal of a life. Agreed. And I'm sorry. I've spent much time in the phone mines. So I hope that you are in a pleasant version of the phone mines. I've definitely been in better and worse myself. Meg seems to be awake, so I guess I'll take over. The traditional unearthly items spading roundup. 2014 had a record number of unearthly items at 9. Oh, well, it's actually good to know that I was keeping more or less on schedule. I really want to release one a month. Never quite seems to work out that way. Blade of the Snows, we found several techniques. The snowman opponent of Frozen Road. I think we're pretty good here unless there's another hidden technique or avatar to be found. No, that's pretty solid. Stainless Skull's Helmet, my famous arm item of the year, I think. I'm glad you like it. A lot of hidden stuff find already, so I think we're pretty good here as well. I think there is actually a totally smaller thing that might still be hiding there. Let me double check real quick. Yeah, there's a pretty slick thing still in there. You may ask yourself, is it slick or is it ballin'? As it turns out, it's both. Reflex Coil Pants. Two techniques and two effects make me wonder if there's anything more to find here. Some suspicious effects, ID gaps right after the Reflex Coil effects that could be related. I mean, the Reflex Coil Pants and, I mean, the one coin items in general are not typically super involved. I mean, sometimes I sort of break down like an idiot and make them huge. Yeah, 423 and 424 are unrelated to the Reflex Coil Pants, for what it's worth. Charm Chain, pretty well stated, I think. My only question here is from the Snapping Chains technique, which states, you probably won't break this chain, but other bonds may not be so strong. No idea what this is referring to, but I couldn't find anything special with this so far. If I remember correctly, the technique there does have some cool stuff going on. Yeah. Yeah, there's some cool stuff there. There's also some funny stuff, obviously, from my my laughter. But yeah, the snapping chains, there is some stuff going on there in the background, which apparently I haven't found yet. But it's pretty cool. Midgard HGS prototype. Neat little one-coin item, pretty well explored, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like you guys pretty much found everything out of that. It was fairly, I'm not going to say straightforward exactly, but pretty linear, and I think you followed that through to the end. I was so tempted with this one to make it a two-coin item. It's actually a... But, I mean, you need to be done. And that's actually really, really kind of the type of thing that I was talking about with Reflex Coil Pants. I end up really going too far with a lot of the one-coin items. I feel like I should probably just be more liberal with when I... Because I try to alternate back and forth. I think I should probably just go with whatever my gut says, because sometimes the one-coin items end up being more like two-coin items, and that makes things sort of confusing more than anything else. Because even with the amount of content the HGS had there, I feel like a two-coin item wouldn't have been completely inappropriate. And if I bumped it up to two coins, I probably would have felt better including some of the other content. Tattered, a horror paperback. Neat little two-coin item. Pretty well explored, I think. Complete with very rare Avatar Discovery. I think people have gotten that one pretty well. There might still be some sort of meta stuff to figure out there, but the details are pretty well handled. I do really like that item, too. Just the theme, mostly. And Puyo had so much fucking fun working on that. If there's one thing that Puyo loves, it's some mad fucking science. So, we really had a ball with that one. The bullet hole vest, it may not be fair to judge items by the amount of things it gives, but for one effect and two techniques, it feels like we're missing something here. I feel like that one may just be pretty simple. As a side note, Al was nice enough to warn me that he was doing the roundup, but I looked over everything and was like, oh, hey, yeah, I should totally check out these items, so I remember what the heck was going on. And then, of course, I totally and utterly forgot what I was doing, what I had learned in the process there. This lag is solely on me and not on Al. It's interesting. Okay. There we go. Oops. I found a typo. Okay. Yeah, it looks like that one was... That's actually another one that I was really... I won't get into too much what I was thinking about doing with it, because I'll probably end up doing it with something else later. I was really thinking about making that one into a two-coin item, and it ended up sort of the other half of the one-coin versus two-coin item problem. I ended up really... having, like, this sort of grandiose idea for it being for what I would do if it ended up being a two-coin item, but it ended up being, as a one-coin item, pretty small. Which is kind of a bummer. I like having some items that are actually pretty straightforward and simple, and I think the Bullet Hold Fest actually does a pretty good job at that, so I'm not going to, I don't want to totally cut out one-coin items or anything like that, but the, I think making the one coin items that are too complicated into two coin items would probably help make that seem a little less weird. Lens focused on the unknown. Lots discovered, but some mechanics not fully understood. No question here until I explore more. Debated needing for sure, especially on the exaltations. Yeah, there's some pretty weird stuff going on. Incredibly abused points. The most confusing item from you so far. See, others on the wiki have gotten results from it, but I have equipped for days and have only gotten a couple of ghoul bites. I guess I'm obviously missing some trigger, but can't figure it out what, so any hints? I mean, it giving you the ghoul bites is kind of a hint by itself. So, there definitely is some stuff going on there. There were a few issues right along when it launched. So if you had it equipped right when it came out and weren't getting a good variety of results, you might want to give it another try now. But yeah, other than that, I would just keep an eye on those ghoul bites. Volmo, I blame deadlines and work in Factorio at home for leaving my questions until so late. Hopefully you are doing well and everything is going smoothly. Yeah, definitely doing a lot better than I have been. Oh, actually, one other thing I've been working on that has been actually sucking up quite a bit of my time. I am working on learning Objective C, which is incredibly timely, as they, you know, just came out with Swift. So, you know, obviously, right on the, you know, the forefront of, you know, things going on. But, and that's been taking up a lot of time, not immediately necessarily relevant to Metroplexity, but there have been a lot of requests in the past for a iOS interface for Metroplexity. And I'm moving in a direction where that might be feasible, which is what Objective-C and Swift are, I shouldn't say, for. But really, the only reason that you would bother to learn either of them is to do iOS or Mac app programming. So I've been sort of been working on that some too, and that's been a lot of fun, but obviously not something that takes zero time or energy. I'll probably there's a couple of more basic things I want to do, but assuming I can sort of make the language do what I want it to, which seems fairly likely. One of the things I would like to do at some point is create a, like I said, a Metroplexity interface for iOS devices, so that'd be pretty cool. I'll leave off the floating masks in the Hall of Sculptures, and one of the results, which raises a couple questions. The result where they appear to accept us normally looks to be linked to having a specific Mac and an associated technique in your deck, such as Festival Mask with Contempt. One oddity I've discovered was the distorted Wolfman Mask, when paired with the Wolfskin Belt, will result in acceptance from the masks. Are the masks responding to one or more techniques we can't normally learn, but is technically in our deck while the werewolf form, or is something else in play? There is actually just a lot going on in that encounter. And most of it, naturally, is hard-coded. Yeah. Yeah, there's it's not directly checking your techniques, just that you are in accord with your mask. That said, pretty much all of the other ones follow that pattern, so it is sort of the odd man out there. A couple quick questions with the Wolfskin Belt. Are we missing any techniques that interact with it? I don't believe so. There was a problem with one of them that actually, maybe you reported upon? I feel like that might have been you. Well, regardless, someone reported a bug on that wasn't working on, was interacting, but was interacting in a very, like, backwards, miscoded sort of manner that's working like the others now. Yeah, I think you've got all of them. It feels like there's still at least one more mystery remaining, if not more. Would you be willing to provide a one- or two-word hint? Keep howling? That might not be very useful, but it is a one- or two-word hint, so I guess I'll go with it. Back in Podcast 35, Ian created some interactions remained with Ragman's cape, but we hadn't yet discovered the things that interacted with. While the interactions that have not been found are one of more than the previous unknowns now known to us. Are they known unknowns or unknown unknowns? They are in this case still waiting to be discovered. It might be a while. I mean, it has already been a long while since those went in. Like, those, it's interacting with things that existed before it came out, naturally. And they had actually already been sort of undiscovered for a while by that point. So, it may be a while. So I wouldn't necessarily worry about that from a Ragman's cape direction, as when you find cool new things that are sort of old, when you find cool old things that sound like they might interact with the Ragman's cape, I would go ahead and give that a try. But I would, trying to find that in the reverse direction might just be frustrating. The code is mysterious. Search tree still has a form if yet to find. Out of curiosity, does it hinder on hacking like the first two upgrades? Does it instead require making use of it meat space to hone our proficiency? I believe there is some meat space interaction there. Wow. Just looking at the stats for the higher forms of that coat, and those are some serious stats. Actually, not know that one yet. No, yeah, you totally don't. I'm trying to remember how that is unlocked exactly. this item description actually directly references Meat World. I enjoy the hacking stuff. But yeah, the I feel like I don't want to steer you astray, and I don't 100% remember how you unlock that final form. So I will have to leave that one unanswered for now. One last mention, plus a question about skills by ID. In podcasts long past, it was indicated that skills 64 through 67 and 72 through 73 were implemented but not available. At the risk of crushing Mag's will to live, are any of these skills currently available, or they still wait until the stars are right? That one I can probably answer for you. Oops. 67, 72, and 73. 64 is available. 65 through 67 are not. I don't believe 72 and 73 are. So, only one of those has become available. Are there any plans on more entries for the Dove Corner? Those are good reads. Actually, I was thinking about writing a post about what I was talking about with Crusader Kings 2 sort of up thread. And, yeah. Just because that's sort of an interesting general concept that reflects a bit on Metroplexity's design, I think. So I might go ahead and do that coming up here. That's the sound of me adding a thing to do. Okay. Some questions from Magnifico. There are still some very old mysteries out in the wild, waiting patiently to be found. Are they all fiendishly hidden, or there's some low-hanging fruit left? There definitely are a couple of them that are just like, just sort of waiting for someone to be like, oh, I should try this thing, and then it'll just be like, here you go. And honestly, the person finding it may not even think it's extraordinary. Like some of the skills, it wouldn't entirely surprise me if someone found them and just didn't think to mention it to anyone, because those are it feels like they would just show up in, like, if someone saw the pieces at the right time, they'd be like, oh yeah, these two things, yeah, they should totally work together. But because the pieces are normally sort of separated, it doesn't leap to mind. But yeah, no, I would say, I mean, some of the things that have been hanging out for a while are just like, what the hell, Landon? Like, what are you doing? But there are some that are still, yeah, pretty straightforward. Like, you know, do A and B, or, you know, have A and B equipped, or do A, well, you know, under the effects of B, or whatever. As opposed to, like, you know, the do A three times, well, you know, B is equipped, and you have C effect active, and then after that's happened, go to area D and do whatever. So, yeah. And then there are obviously some of those as well. There's still plenty of the former to go around. Why are all the rebels gravediggers? it's actually... I wouldn't have minded including a greater variety of rebels, but... the whole item there is actually a pretty straight up like homage to Robert Chambers, who is best well known now for introducing Haster the Unspeakable and the King in Yellow and the Yellow Sign to the Cthulhu mythos, and was actually a very kind of interesting figure in his own right, the reason that they're gravediggers is a reference to part of his sort of Carcosa Yellow Sign sort of cycle. Part of the reason that the appearance of the Chamberlain and the fact that the file name for the crown is Repairer Crown and things like this, are all sort of just like little nods here and there. And not everything in the item is necessarily a reference, but very, very worth picking up. If you want to read one of his short stories, I would, particularly for its, you know, background information on the crown, I would suggest picking up the Repairer of Reputations. That's very good. But it's actually really funny looking back at him in general, is that there's sort of this archetypical narrative that we have about, you know, successful artists of any type, whether they be, you know, writers or painters or game designers or whatever, that, like, they produce this, you know, early amazing work, and then, you know, they make it big, and then they just go and produce fucking schlock, right? And I honestly, I feel like for the most part, that narrative is kind of crap. In Chambers' case, it's very much a sort of, he produced, the cycle that we're talking about there with, Carcosa and so forth. And then, went on, actually had a, incredibly successful writing career afterwards, but like, most of it is just, like, didn't, like, it's it's hard to find any of it because it was just like, even at the time, was sort of just treated as, you know, mass-produced trash. Which isn't to say it necessarily isn't good. Like, I haven't actually read, you know, really any of it because I haven't been able to track me down. But, yeah, there's a lot going on there. The other thing that's actually kind of cool about Chambers is that, in addition to a lot of his stuff being referenced in the Cthulhu mythos, a lot of the same stuff shows up in Dark Rover by Marion Zimmer Bradley. So you get references to Haster and Casilda, who are sort of important characters, well, important references in Chambers' stuff. And you also get the Cloud Lake Holly and so forth. Actually, there's even one Plateau of Leng reference in Darkover, which I had not noticed, actually. Liz had to point that out to me. There's a Plateau of Leng not being Chambers, I don't think, but is actually wouldn't surprise me if Lovecraft had taken it from someone else as well. But yeah. Anyway, yeah. So, the fact that they are gravediggers is a reference to one of the stories in that cycle. But yeah, that is what I've got. I think we've had about an hour and a half of me talking. Hopefully I've actually been able to answer most of your questions and have provided hints that are appropriately tantalizing, but not actually, spelling things out too much. And work will continue onward on Old Town, which is definitely still the main focus I've got going on. I was actually very pleased to get all of my notes from the last podcast taken care of before I did this one. So that's cool. But I've got some new notes here, and I think I'll be able to take care of those without too much trouble. But yeah, I think that's the main thing that I am working on, like I said, Old Town, and then hopefully I'll get to do some of the remaining sort of cleanup stuff on Novos with bringing the Golden Ship up to standards, and eventually launching the new hacking PvP stuff, the Novos PvP, which I'm not 100% sure when that'll happen, how that'll tie in. I'm a little torn on whether to wait to do the Golden Chip until then. Oh, and there's still actually one really cool thing I want to add to Novos. So yeah, probably a couple of Novos updates coming up over the course of the next couple of months, between whenever I sort of have the energy between working on Old Town stuff. But the Old Town stuff is actually coming quite well, I guess, just to give a sort of status report on that before I sign off. There are sort of two major areas, in Old Town, like as far as, like, if you think of for the docks quest, there's, like, you know, the waterfront and then the dockside sewers, right? There's, totally different structurally, but sort of like a similar, at least a number of locations going on. And, actually, I guess it's fairly comparable as far as like just the straight up number of areas. Cause there's also sort of a hideout equivalent as well. Which I wasn't thinking about earlier for some reason. And, I've got the first one of those I'm basically just polishing, now. There's a tiny bit that I still need to sort out. And then might work on a few, like, side bits equivalent to, you know, the warehouses, we'll say. And then dive into the real sort of end of the challenges. But yeah, there's still a couple of big things and a lot of little stuff left to do. So we've got some time before that shows up. And I will, of course, try to stay as focused on that as I can. But I also know that it's sort of boring to not have any, you know, little updates while I'm doing that. So, at the very least, I'll try to keep up on the unearthly items and try to slip in a little something else every so often. But I apologize if there are gaps between little updates. Probably just means that my head is buried in Old Town stuff. And that's when I get, you know, the vast majority of the work on it done. So I will apologize, but it's the sort of apology that carries no intent on fixing it. So, you know, if there's sort of like, if there's a couple week gap, that probably means that I got, like, you know, another giant area done, as opposed to if, you know, I'm getting a little update out every week, that may just mean I get, like, you know, a little thing here and there. So anyway, I will try, you know, not to make that take too long, but obviously it's been long enough already that me saying that is both kind of empty and, like, the difference between me being fast from here and me being slow from here doesn't really, you know, I know, change the total length of time that people have been waiting for this very much. So I'll just have to do my best moving forward. And that's, I guess that's the whole situation with Old Town. But I'm pretty excited with what we've gotten so far. It's the area that I'm polishing now is really rich. There's a lot going on there. So that's cool. And yeah, that's sort of what's on my plate. And I will try to keep you posted, at the very least, on what's going on. And thank you very much for listening to me ramble for an hour and a half. And thank you for playing Metroplexity, of course, and donating. And really, really thank you for donating. The financial situation here hasn't been amazing to go along with all of the other reasons that Winter and I don't really get along. But things have been staying together, which is good. And thank you for plugging the game to your friends. And I hope that they are also playing it and enjoying it. And I will catch you on our next podcast, 41. Thanks, and have a great week.